Well, hello everyone and welcome back. Today is Friday, January 31st, 2014. My name is Angela Walton-Raji and this is the African Roots Podcast. Remember, you can always reach me at africanrootspodcast@gmail.com. Well, everyone, how are you? My goodness. I can't believe it. It's the end of January, 1 month down, and 11 to go for this year. Amazing. But hey, at the same time, winter is really, really amazing this year. I hope everyone is staying warm. More snow is coming to the whole midsection of the country. Big storm going to be in Oklahoma, Arkansas, Missouri, that whole part of the country there. Also, I hope all our friends listening in the Atlanta area are okay. Now, I know you all didn't have lots of snow, but you all had an amazing situation this week. We were all watching it on the news. It started out, oh, kind of amusing. Oh, look, they don't know what to do with the snow. The weather is the way it is. And they're kind of, what's the word, I guess, just kind of perplexed in terms of what to do with the weather. Oh, look at the traffic. People don't know how to drive in the snow. Well, actually, it was a little bit beyond that, and it wasn't all of that. Yes, the incredible story was the amazing gridlock, and I'm just so very sorry to hear that you all had to go through that. I hope most of our listeners were not affected in a dramatic way, but I know a lot of people were. 10, 12, 18, 20 hours being stranded, not being able to go anyplace. Children had to sleep in schools. People slept in Walgreens and other shelters, stores. Was it a Home Depot or Office Depot or one of those stores opened themselves up really just to the public to give people a place of refuge from the elements. And wow, all I can just simply say is that hopefully the problems that contributed to it, which I understand were really not problems of not having just an idea of what to do with the snow. Maybe warnings of inclement weather, you know, can be heeded differently. You know, it's better to err on the side of caution, I suppose, than to have a situation like that. I hope that many people were not injured. And, you know, really, it was something that really turned out to be quite, quite serious. So I'm glad that that crisis is over, as it was affecting people 2 or 3 days ago. But at the same time, certainly lessons to be learned in terms of city planning and maybe other options for transportation, you know, can be looked into. But anyway, wow, our hearts and prayers are with you anyway, and hope many of you were not really traumatized. Well, that's on to the news in the genealogy community. News from Redex.com, and that's a site I was not familiar with before. And I was excited, however, to see that over 100 years worth of data or published works covering a span of 100 years. We're talking from the 1820s to the 1920s, and 1820 to 1922 to be exact. Well, apparently there have been some amazing works that have been digitized by Redex, and these are the holdings of the American Antiquarian Society, and their holdings of materials pertaining to slavery and abolition. And we're talking about over 3,000 works. Some of these are books, some are pamphlets, some are actual papers, some are pieces of correspondence, some are graphics, some are ephemera, southern imprints, all kinds of things. And it's truly amazing. And some are truly rare. Books and papers, for example, pertaining to the establishment of the Republic of Liberia. And one can actually look at some of the papers describing the proposal for the establishment of this new country for freed slaves and what this would consist of and what really went into establishing the Republic. Also, other kinds of topics were covered, and even copies of original narratives. Many of us have read, for example, the life, the narrative of Equiano, the slave. And Equiano is a book many of us have. I think I have it on my Kindle. I have other old narratives as well. But I don't have a digitized image in color and color resolution. Now, of course, it wasn't printed in color, but still, you know, you get to see the paper the way it is, the aging look of the paper. And all of these are done, which I'm really excited to see this. They're done in high resolution color. So some of those pamphlets and some of those ephemera images are, you know, truly the way they were produced and presented to the world, but also in terms of how they look now. Rare items, works and papers pertaining to Denmark Vesey, even some early papers and some writings, rather, personal papers of Du Bois. And this is really kind of exciting to get information on how to access these digitized images. I'm going to put an 800 number on the podcast website for you. There's also a contact form that you can simply fill out, and I'll put a link to that contact form as well. But great news to hear about this digitization. Over 3,500 works digitized for scholars and researchers. That's really wonderful, wonderful news. Also, some news. Oh gosh, this one's kind of serious. It has happened yet again. Destruction of records. This story comes out of St. Louis County, in Missouri. Two federal workers have admitted to intentionally, let's just say, misfiling at least 1,800 records. Now, some of these documents were found dumped in a wooded area, which is so hard to believe. This is in the community or the area in St. Louis County known as the Spanish Lake area. Well, there were some records dumped in the woods in that area, in the county, and it's kind of peculiar in terms of what the rationale was. There's also a study, an ongoing investigation. Apparently, five other workers, also federal workers, and these are individuals. I should point out when I'm saying federal workers, individuals who work at the National Personnel Center. Okay, National Personnel Records Center. Five of the workers apparently have shown a disproportionate number of missing documents. They have not been cited as yet, however, but you know. This is quite disturbing to hear about, and I'm going to put a link to the article that describes actually what happened. But this is quite disturbing as it's coming right after we're still trying to wrap our heads and minds around the Franklin County, North Carolina incident that many of us in the genealogy community are still upset over, that unbelievable destruction of records that took place just about a month ago in Franklin County. Well, of course, you know, as we look at that story, and we're shaking our heads, this destruction or intentional misfiling or intentional dumping of records took place at the hands of federal employees. And it is the kind of thing that leaves you speechless, because the very individuals whom we trust as caretakers of the records that we need are the ones who've contributed to the destruction of the very same documents. I'll put a link to the story for you. Is this happening in places more frequent than we may be aware? And this is something for us to think about and to give some thought to that. And I will come back to that a little bit later in the podcast, because you know, this kind of weighs heavy on the hearts of anyone who's interested in preservation. So anyway, wow, a hard story to hear about. Oh, some good news. Congratulations are in order. You know, you've heard me talk about author Marion Woodfork Simmons. You've heard me talk about her before. She wrote the beautiful book called Memories of Union High, which depicted a 60 plus year history of Union High School in Caroline County, Virginia. Now, Caroline County, like many counties throughout America, was generally not interested for many, many decades in equal opportunity for an education for everyone in the state. And at that time, Caroline County, like other places, had only one school that African Americans could attend. And as a result, many people, if you didn't live in the county seat, you didn't live where the school was, you were either out of luck or you had to send your children away to live maybe with relatives who were close by, or perhaps to live sometimes with strangers even who would take in the students who were going to high school, trying to get a high school education. Anyway, the book that she wrote, it's beautiful. I've mentioned it before, and devoted a podcast to her work, and also wrote a small article. I also produced a video about it, and I'll put a link to that video for you as well. But this is the good news. She just received this week, actually, it was January the 26th, this past week. She received the Caroline Historical Society Award for 2013 for her work in researching and preserving Caroline County, Virginia history. And, her work and that book, and what was so wonderful in that book, if you've not seen it, please take a look, or take a look at the video. You can see what's just really neat about it. She got rare photos that were shared with her by people who still live in the community. Early pictures of the school before it was actually known as Union High, and early pictures of the students, of the staff, of the school grounds, so much. And she really took some time to talk with people, to do her research, the kind of thing all of us should be doing in our own respective communities. Well, it is a beautiful book, and she did a beautiful job, and just congratulations are in order for her to do that. Well, with that being said, I can just simply say, let us all send some words of congratulations to her. I'm going to post an email contact address for her, because I think we all need to extend just a handshake to her and say, well deserved, and a hearty, hearty congratulations. I am just so pleased to hear of this news, and I'm so happy that this was shared with the genealogy community. Well, tomorrow, February 1st, I hope that, of course, February is Black History Month, but for genealogists in the African American genealogy community, every month is Black History Month. However, there are a number of things that are kicking off all over the country, and so, open your eyes, pay attention to what is going on in your own local community. Far too many events to mention here. But there are some things that are going on that are regular events or annual events. And if you're in the greater Washington, D.C. area, you may want to try to get down to Washington to the African American Civil War Memorial and Museum. Genealogist and author Melvin J. Collier will be giving a presentation on how he researched his Civil War ancestor. Now, the first Saturday of every month is known as Descendants Day. This is an opportunity where individuals who have ancestors who served in the Civil War have a chance to come and tell their ancestors' story. And tomorrow, Melvin Collier is going to talk about how he has researched and documented his own ancestor, Edward Bobo, no, Edward Danner, I guess it is. I know that there's another family line connected there. I was excited that I had the honor of actually going to the archives to collect that first pension file for him and to send it, to mail it to him. And of course, since that time, he's been an avid Civil War enthusiast himself. He's going to be speaking tomorrow, and I'm going to put a link. It starts at 1 o'clock. I'll put a link for you to the site of the Civil War Memorial so you can get some information on directions if you're not familiar with Washington. It is located on Vermont Avenue Northwest, and I'll put a phone number as well. So, I really do hope that you'll have a chance to go and hear him. also tomorrow in Baltimore, Maryland. It's an opportunity to attend a genealogy expo. Now, that's a lot of fun. I've had a chance to go to this event several times, and this is a lot of fun. It's at the Enoch Pratt Library Branch on Cold Spring and Loch Raven, and it's free, free to the public. Have you ever just dabbled with the idea of genealogy? You don't like to do the family history, but you're not quite sure what to do, when to do, where to go. Well, why not go to an expo and let people who are genealogists talk to you about what they've done? They're going to have displays up. They're going to really take a look. They're going to show their family trees. They're going to show some books if they've written books on their families. And there's always a session for beginners that's going to unfold as well. And it is free. It's open to the public. It starts at noon, as I said, at the Enoch Pratt Library on Cold Spring and Loch Raven in Baltimore, Maryland. So if you're within an hour drive from Baltimore, you may want to come to that as well. So it's good to see that things are unfolding all over the place. I got a message out of Oklahoma, by the way. The Muscogee Creek Indian Freedmen Band is going to have a special day of history and family research, particularly looking at the freedmen of the Muscogee Creek Nation and what they went through with the Dawes Commission. This is on the 11th of February, and it's going to be at the College of the Muscogee Nation on a 1200 Highway Loop 56. This is in Okmulgee, Oklahoma. Those of you who are within driving distance from Tulsa, from Muscogee, from other parts of that whole central Oklahoma area, you may want to go and see if you can learn something and learn how to research your family. I'll put a link to you in terms of how to get there and information on contacting individuals. And as they say in the Muscogee Creek language, mado, which means thank you. And I certainly thank members of the band for sharing that with me also. I was very, very, very excited to see some information, some useful websites, and I love pointing out just neat websites that I think you should visit. And this is something that often I know those of us who research enslaved ancestors, we often wonder, well, where were they enslaved? Where did they live? Where could they possibly have spent so many years toiling during those years of enslavement? Well, if you've found yourself in that situation, wanting to know exactly where they may have lived, and especially if they came from an agricultural community and not a larger city, maybe you've wondered, is there a list of estates or plantations where people may have lived or worked? Well, someone shared a list that I had never seen before, and it came actually off of a site that I visit from time to time, but I had never noticed this link. And this off, and it's funny because it's from one state, but reflecting plantations from another. On the Tennessee Gem website, there was a list of plantations in the state of Alabama, interestingly. And I'm putting a link for those of you who are Alabama researchers. And keep in mind one other thing, though. You know, you're always told and encouraged to research a community, to research the community where your ancestors lived, learn what the neighboring states are. So if you're from a neighboring state that borders Alabama, then it's very possible you do want to pay attention to this and see if there's something there that would be useful, that would be of interest to you, because maybe your ancestors came off of an Alabama state plantation, even though they lived in Middle Tennessee, Giles County, for example. I have ancestors who lived in Giles County, right next to Limestone County, Alabama. So anyway, it's really kind of interesting to see this list. It's a list of Alabama plantations. Now, it doesn't contain data. You can't click on it and see who all the slaves were on the plantation. But just knowing where these larger estates were really might benefit someone who has ties to the state of Alabama. I'm going to put a link to that for you because I think it could, excuse me, it could be quite useful as well. And I always enjoy finding and learning about certain sites that have sort of researchable data. You know, these are the kinds of things that we really long for. These are our tools that will help us find those ancestors that we seek. Virginia Researchers, a useful database, was shared with me this week. Now, this covers Loudoun County, Virginia, and this pertains to something called slave issue papers. I'd never heard of that. And what surprised me when I went to take a look at it, this rests on a government site, on a county government site. And it's called Slave Issues, 1757 to 1861. Well, this is fascinating because it's an index, and this index is really a collection of fiduciary deeds, court judgments, and bills of sales, including the names of slaves and their owners, in addition to even some references to emancipation records, which is so exciting. Now, it's not common to find, at least in my experience, not common, meaning, you know, across the board, every state, every county, to find states where slavery documents cover the span of years and it's just a click away. And it's even less common to find this kind of information on a government website. This is a county government. Over 100 years worth of slavery era documents with the enslaved and slaveholder names. Now, this is, as I said, one of those things that I wish was far more widespread, especially including the multiple states that I research. But to even see some deeds of emancipation included. And now, when you click on the link, and I am going to provide a link for you. It opens up, but the images are small, so you will have to enlarge it, but it opens up quickly, and it's easy to manipulate and to search through. So I strongly recommend this site. Even if you don't research Loudoun County, Virginia, keep in mind that much of Virginia was changing over those years, and you may find ancestors who ended up in other counties or neighboring states who really started in that area. It is more than useful. And I'll just simply say that I was impressed. And I guess I was just also doubly impressed because it is resting on a county government site. You don't see this a lot. Pardon me, my voice is cracking here. You don't see this often, but I am thrilled that the county government saw the value of putting this searchable data on their website. Take a look at it. Oh my gosh, it's called Slave Issues, 1757 to 1861. Well, folks, I have to say, I had a great time last night. I'm referring to Bernice Bennett's Blog Talk Radio program, Research at the National Archives and Beyond. The topic was Native American and African American ancestry and how to document that unique history. And I was honored. I was her guest last night. That's right, yours truly. And I had just a marvelous time. She's a wonderful host anyway, so if you've ever heard her show, you'll understand what I mean. The discussion in the chat room at the time was quite lively, and the questions were really thought-provoking questions as well. If you missed it, you can take a look. Just go to the link to her show, which I'm putting there for you on the podcast website, and listen to it. You know, all of her shows are always archived immediately afterwards, so it's just a click away for you to go back and re-listen, and any other shows that you may have missed. I just want to say thank you very much to Miss Bernice Bennett for having me as her guest. I thoroughly enjoyed myself. And I did put also during the show, I mentioned a reference to my blog, the African Native American blog, because prior to the show, the day before, I listed a blog with sample census records showing African Native American families or communities. I put them on my blog that when I referenced the census records from 1940 back to 1870 with examples in multiple states from New England to New York, down the coast to the Carolinas, into, of course, Oklahoma, but also Texas and other states. Take a look at it because you will see some of the things that I was referring to as you listen to the podcast. You can just click, go over to the blog, and see what I was talking about. So, you know, definitely listen to her show. It's always a thrill to listen to her show anyway. So, thank you. And as I said, every Thursday evening on Blog Talk Radio, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, you can join the conversation live. So take a listen if you have some time today or the next few days. I want to go back very briefly and visit that story of the records that were destroyed from the National Personnel Records Center in Missouri. And not just the story itself, but I guess that record, in addition to that story out of Franklin County, leaves me just a thought keeps occurring and going through my head. We, the public, depend upon these facilities and depend upon these repositories. Keep in mind, the Franklin County story was a county facility, and the records out of Missouri were in a federal repository. The question simply being that we are dependent on having access, on depending upon seeing, using these documents for our research. And I'm not even sure what our response should be, other than, you know, not just saying, oh my goodness, look at what has happened. Perhaps this is the time, though, for us to take action. And when I say take action, maybe this is the time to start maybe citizens committees or communities having certain groups that become friends of the courthouse, friends of the archives. There are already organizations that have friends groups. There's the Friends of the Southeast Regional National Archives in Georgia, Friends of the Oklahoma Historical Society, and there are all kinds of friends groups. But maybe this is the time for us to think about being proactive in terms of visiting certain courthouses or research facilities, requesting once in a while an effort in a friendly way to become supporters, to become advocates of preserving their holdings. Maybe a friends group can be established requesting support and offering assistance to some of those keepers of the records. I think about the Franklin County story, and I've seen those pictures of those documents, how they were stored in a moldy basement. Maybe this is the time where a community group can say, we would like to extend a hand. If there are any boxes and things that need to be preserved, maybe we can help even to bring this to the attention of the community, that perhaps there can be some sort of referendum to, you know, in the future to protect them. We can't just always tell the courthouse, okay, go and put these in a better place. Sometimes their funds are limited, but maybe this is time for a call to action on our own part. Now, the National Repository, I have no idea what to say about that. My head is still sort of spinning around that story when the very workers themselves are involved, perhaps, or allegedly involved with some misplacement and mistreatment of precious and rare documents. But at least on our local level, maybe it's time to visit those facilities. I remember listening to a story, was it 20 years ago, when Dr. Barnetta McGee White shared the story on how she found cohabitation records. And she would visit courthouses and would just look up and say, well, what are those boxes way up there? And then somebody bothered to go and see what those boxes were, and they were cohabitation records. These are records that also could have been lost or chewed up by mice or anything. But she dared to ask. And maybe it's time to put our heads together and determine how can we approach facilities and bring forth things, and particularly to launch digitization projects in any kind of way. A time for us to put our heads together and think within our own societies, within our own historical organizations, preservation groups. It's maybe time for a call to action or time to just say, hey, let's see what we can do and let's work with these facilities as citizen advocates of preservation. Anyway, just some food for thought. And I'm looking at the time. And guess what? I think I've run out. Anyway, thank you for taking time out of your day for listening to me. Thank you to those who've shared information with me this week as well. And certainly understand that you are appreciated as listeners. And until, of course, next week, I do want you to stay warm. It is still winter. Stay warm, stay dry, stay safe. More ice and snow is on the way. This has been a real bear of a winter. And trust me, I'm going to see what that groundhog is going to be doing day after tomorrow. I look forward to seeing many of you maybe in the next few days at a few events also. In the meantime, be well and be safe. And remember to keep doing, of course, what you always do. And that is to keep researching, keep documenting, and yes, always keep sharing what you find. Take care, everyone. Be well and be safe. I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.